This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
These are the two major ideas that are clashing this election. The clash between change and continuity in an environment where governance systems, structures and outcomes have not been beneficial to the majority of the people.
That was Zimbabwean Anna Sibanda about her hopes for what the government will do after Wednesday's election. Details coming up. Also, in Cameroon, Gabon citizens are encouraged to vote in their country's elections. And in Egypt, a journalist is freed from detention. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Gabon is asking nearly 3,000 citizens in neighboring Cameroon to take part in this Saturday's elections by either voting or helping to maintain peace. Although major opposition parties in Gabon have backed a former minister and university professor for president, voters and political analysts in Cameroon say President Ali Bongo Ondimba is unlikely to lose his family's 56-year-old grip on the government of the oil-producing nation. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Gabon officials say 64-year-old President Ali Bongo Ondimba has instructed them to tell citizens living in Cameroon to be patriotic and not follow calls for an election boycott. Paul Patrick Bifort is Gabon's ambassador to Cameroon.
Nous approchons d'une échéance très
Speaking in French, Bifort urges Gabon citizens in Cameroon to be united, peaceful and respectful of laws in their host country while accomplishing their civic duties by effectively voting in this weekend's general elections. He says incumbent President Bongo wants all citizens of Gabon to vote freely and respect the results of the ballot. Bifort said Bongo, in a message to citizens, reiterated that all Gabonese at home in Cameroon or elsewhere should be peaceful before, during and after the polls. About 3,000 Gabonese live in Cameroon and more than 300 have registered to vote in Saturday's elections. They are allowed to vote while still in Cameroon. Teacher Pierre-Marie Ondo is among the registered voters. Ondo says even though he is registered, he will not vote because Bongo is not healthy, following a stroke he suffered in 2019, and he still walks on crutches. He says the president is doing everything possible to stay in power until he dies. The Gabonese Elections Center reports that 18 opposition candidates are competing against Bongo. But on Friday, 5 opposition candidates said they agreed to support the candidacy of 69-year-old Albert Ondo Osa, former minister and university professor, in an alliance known as Alternance 2023. By joining forces, the opposition says they hope to defeat Bongo and end his family's 56 years at the top of the government. Kani Rodolph is a visiting lecturer at Cameroon's Douala University. He says it will be very difficult to beat Bongo in the polls.
Il faut laisser la propagande sur la transparence démocratique.
Kani says the talks about democratic transparency by officials in Gabon are just more propaganda. He says the Bongo family has confiscated the liberties and freedoms of citizens over the past 60 years, and President Bongo refuses to give up power. Bongo has always said his stay in power is democratic and that his victories in previous elections were fair. Bongo's last victory in 2016 triggered deadly clashes between police and protesters. Some demonstrators torched the parliament building in the capital, Libreville. Bongo has ruled the oil-producing nation for 2 7-year terms since succeeding his father, Omar Bongo, who died in 2009 after holding the presidency since 1967. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
An Egyptian journalist was released Sunday, nearly 48 hours after his arrest, following reports accusing officials of involvement in smuggling cash, weapons and gold to Zambia. Assad was apprehended at his home in Greater Cairo early Saturday after his fact-checking service, Matasta Touish, published articles concerning the smuggling case. According to Egypt's Journalist Union, the country has 23 journalists behind bars. There was no official comment concerning Assad's detention. Zambia's Drug Enforcement Commission last week seized a plane from Cairo carrying nearly $5.7 million, as well as pistols, ammunition, and 127 kilos of suspected gold. Zambian authorities arrested 10 suspects, 9 of them foreigners. Egyptian state media said the aircraft in question was privately owned and that it only transited through Cairo. On Saturday, Egyptian activist Ahmed Douma, a leading figure in the country's 2011 uprising, walked out of prison after a decade. He was given a presidential pardon. Douma helped lead the uprising that toppled longtime president Hosni Mubarak. He was arrested in the crackdown that followed the army's 2013 ouster of Mohamed Morsi, the Islamist president elected after the uprising. After Morsi's overthrow, the authorities rounded up thousands pro-democracy activists as well as Islamists in mass arrests that drew international condemnation. Since last year, rights monitors say Egyptian authorities have released 1,000 political prisoners but detained almost 3,000 more. As Zimbabwe prepares to go for polls on Wednesday, for women voters, the country's battered economy and deterioration of social services are key issues. Rutenda Mawere in Harare has more for VOA.
Harare resident Martha Chatikobo says she wants a government that will breathe life into the economy and believes that once this is done, other problems in the country will be resolved.
I believe that the biggest priority right now for whoever is to assume the office of the head of state has to do with improving the state of the economy. There is need to ensure that all revenue generated in the country is accounted for, in that employment is generated. When I'm talking about employment, I'm actually referring to the kind of employment where employees get to live above the poverty datum line. And I also feel that there's a need to control inflation and at the same time to also curb corruption.
Veneranda Langa, she tells VOA that revival of the health and education services should be a top priority.
I want a government that is able to ensure that our health sector is working again. There are no drugs at hospitals. There are no cancer machines, no kidney dialysis machines. So we want a government that is accountable, that is not corrupt, that is transparent, so that they are able to purchase these machines and save the lives of several people that are dying because of lack of medicines and lack of machinery in our hospitals. I also want a government that is going to give a reasonable budget for the education sector, because our children are struggling. Parents are not able to fund education because they earn low salaries.
Joylene Nyachuru urges a focus on public health and safety.
I urge men and women who are going to make it to the Presidium, National Assembly and local government to prioritize water and sanitation, health, especially maternal health, and education. They should consider giving sanitary way for free as they do with condoms and some of the contraceptives they give for free.
For Anas Banda, the return to constitutionalism and employment creation is what she's looking for from a new government after Wednesday's election.
As a citizen of Zimbabwe, who is going to vote on Wednesday, I look forward to see the new government following the constitution of the land. We see that current laws, they violate freedoms or liberties of citizens. The incoming government must make sure that they create jobs for the young people, to at least create an environment that these young people can engage themselves, because our nation has been destroyed. Most young people are now into drugs, and it's sad for Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe will be holding presidential, parliamentary, and municipal council elections on Wednesday, August 23. For VOA Africa, this is Rutendo Mawere Narare.
The Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, has rejected a plan by Niger's coup leaders to relinquish power within 3 years. The ECOWAS Commissioner for Political Affairs, Peace and Security, Abdel Fattou Moussa, said on Nigerian television on Monday that the 3-year transition plan proposed by Niger's military junta was unacceptable. He added that the regional ECOWAS insists on the return of constitutional order as quickly as possible. He said the junta proposed the transition plan as a distraction to remain in power longer. In a televised address Saturday, Niger's junta leader, Abdourahamane Tiani, said the country would return to civilian rule within 3 years. He spoke soon after a meeting with an ECOWAS delegation led by Nigeria's former head of state, Abdul Salam Abubakar. It was the first time the junta had met with ECOWAS since the July 26th coup, raising hopes of continued dialogue. But Fattou Moussa says it is the pressure from ECOWAS sanctions and threat of military intervention that is making the junta more compliant. You're listening to African News Tonight on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Please note we have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. Botswana police have intercepted a truck carrying 40 undocumented Ethiopians, including a 10-year-old boy, who were in transit to neighboring South Africa. 3 men have been arrested and face charges of human trafficking. From Habrone, Botswana, reporter Mokondisi Dube has the details.
The Ethiopians are now being kept at a social protection unit and are undergoing medical checkups. Botswana police spokesperson Nia Bakali says the migrants were found during a stop and search operation in the north of the country.
We intercepted a horse and trailer truck, which was bound for Republic of South Africa. So as the police were searching the truck, they found at the back of the truck in the trailer a total of 40 people. Males. During our investigation, we had to arrest 3 suspects pertaining to this incident, 2 Zambians and 1 Zimbabwean.
The 3 suspects have appeared in court and will remain in custody. In a video circulating on social media, the men and boys are seen without shirts, with some complaining of the heat in the enclosed container. William Els, a security expert at the Pretoria-based Institute of Security Studies, says conflict in some parts of Africa is fueling human trafficking.
The more unstable it is in the Horn of Africa, as well as in the whole belt there towards the Central African Republic, the more we see illegal immigrants moving down to South Africa. And that actually causes a big problem in South Africa, as we saw the Minister of Police, who mentioned that many of these illegal immigrants then resort to crime, and it's very difficult to actually then trace them because they are not documented.
Smuggling migrants in truck containers is often fatal. The International Organization for Migration, in its recently released 2022 Missing Migrants Report, notes that 14% of migrants' deaths are linked to hazardous transportation. Last year, 171 migrants died in Southern Africa from accidents and hazardous transportation. Migrants from the Democratic Republic of Congo accounted for 42% of the deaths, followed by migrants from Ethiopia at 21% and Comoros with 7%. For VOA, this is Mqondisi Dube in Gaborone, Botswana.
South African government officials say the possible creation of a currency to rival the American dollar will not be discussed at the 15th summit of the BRICS countries that begins in Johannesburg tomorrow. The BRICS members are Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. But some political analysts say the meeting will be the first step towards establishing a gold-backed BRICS currency designed to end United States' dominance of global finance structures. Darren Taylor reports.
South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa will be joined at the BRICS summit by Brazil's President Lula da Silva, China's leader Xi Jinping, and India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi. Russian leader Vladimir Putin will attend online because of an international criminal court warrant that could result in him being arrested in South Africa. 40 other heads of state have confirmed they'll be at the summit, including Iran's Ebrahim Raisi. The five BRICS nations represent more than 40% of the global population and about a quarter of the world economy. South Africa's top BRICS official says leaders will discuss using local currencies, including the rand, rupee, and ruble, instead of the dollar in trade and other transactions between members. Politics professor at the University of South Africa, Evaristo Benyera, says the notion is too impractical to be taken seriously.
There will be huge problems simply because the economies where these currencies come from are not as secure as that of the United States. The economies could be bigger in terms of GDP, gross national product, and so on and so on. But in terms of security, the United States remains the strongest individually or collectively.
Benyera says the only practical way to end dollar dominance is to create a gold-backed BRICS currency. China's the largest gold producer in the world, with Russia the third largest. South Africa's number 8 on the list, with Brazil 14th. Benyera points out that the developing world produces the most gold and that the precious metal could form the basis of a new currency, although it won't happen quickly.
I do not see any currency emerging, dislodging the United States without a major, major confrontation occurring. Some are saying the current war between Russia and Ukraine has got the likelihood of producing such an outcome that there will be an alternative currency. But as of now, I see the United States dollar continuing to be the de facto global currency.
Brazilian economist Paulo Batista is former executive director of the International Monetary Fund and former vice president of the BRICS financial instrument, the New Development Bank. He calls the establishment of a BRICS currency inevitable.
The dollar will still be there, but it will no longer be the hegemonic currency that it has been since Second World War. Why? Because the dollar has a very important enemy, the United States of America. When the United States uses the dollar politically to target countries seen as hostile, it harms the credibility of the currency and of its own financial system. So confidence in the dollar has been eroded. But the U.S. itself slow movement towards a diversification of options in the monetary field will happen. And I hope that the BRICS...
Batista says countries of the global south have seen Washington freeze hundreds of billions of dollars of Russian international reserves since Moscow launched its war in Ukraine. They're afraid, he says, the same could happen to them. So they're looking to BRICS to find ways to decrease their reliance on the dollar. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
How has the Russian President Vladimir Putin's July 17th decision to withdraw from the Black Sea Grain Initiative affected sub-Saharan Africa, where many countries have been dependent on Russia and Ukraine for wheat imports? A recent report by the International Food Policy Research Institute says Russia's total exports to sub-Saharan Africa are down by about 13%, and Ukraine's exports have dropped by about 55%. Joseph Glober, one of the authors of the report, tells VOA's Carol Van Damme that Russia's move has had a significant impact on the region.
The Black Sea Grain Initiative was very helpful in getting both wheat and corn, but also a number of other agricultural products out of Ukraine at a time when they were very limited in their options to go overland through Eastern Europe or even through these river ports on the Danube. It's very much more limited than what they can ship out through the deep water ports around Odessa. So that helped a lot. But even with that, most of the exports for wheat, at least, went to North Africa. A little bit went to Asia. We did have about a million tons or so that went to sub-Saharan Africa. But that was largely East Africa. It was largely almost, I think, entirely through the World Food Program. So these were, you know, ultimately, if you look at the sort of WFP program countries, you know, it went to Yemen, it went to Djibouti, it went to Sudan, Somalia, Ethiopia, and some to Kenya. I might add, it also had an impact on Russia as well. I think Russia exports tended to pick up in the second half of the year, but for Russia, it was hard to get initially the first couple of months, in particular, insurance rates and other things on shippers going into the Black Sea were real high. You know, they shipped to more countries in sub-Saharan Africa, but their exports were down considerably, too, in 2022.
In your research analysis, I see that it says in 2022-23 marketing year compared to the previous year, with most of the decline due to the reduced exports from Ukraine and Russia, the wheat exports declined by about 13% from Russia, but about 55% they were down from Ukraine to that sub-Saharan African region.
Yep, exactly.
So that has had to have an impact on the people there.
Well, the imports weren't made up by other exporters, like we saw in a lot of other areas of the world. For example, the Mideast. So you think about Egypt, or excuse me, North Africa. You think about Egypt, Morocco, other countries that are big importers, or certainly last year were big importers of wheat. They were able to source wheat from a lot of alternative sources like Europe, like the U.S., like Argentina, Australia. I think we saw less of that in sub-Saharan Africa. I think our data show that the exports to sub-Saharan Africa for all these other non-Black Sea exporters, that is not Russia, not Ukraine, those exports to sub-Saharan Africa were about the same as they were last year. But the point was that they didn't compensate for the loss of grain from Ukraine and sub-Saharan Africa. What happens in a country that's where wheat is so dominant, wheat, you know, is really composes, 50% or so or more of calories consumed in some households. In Yemen, actually, we saw some increase in wheat consumption, and that was largely because they couldn't afford, the prices had gone up so much, they couldn't afford meat.
What about Russian President Vladimir Putin's claim that this whole shipment initiative cancellation was overstated, the impact on Africa, saying that most of these shipments go other places?
Well, it's true in one sense. That is, about a million tons was shipped and more of wheat was shipped to sub-Saharan Africa. But the impact of the Black Sea Grain Initiative was on world markets. So, you know, by the time the Black Sea Grain Initiative went into effect, global wheat prices were back to pre-war level.
That was Joseph Gobler speaking with VOA's Carol Van Dam. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Thanks for choosing The Voice of America.